You ready to go? Please proceed.
You understand that Precorp does not have shareholders to absorb the cost of the increase from Basin to Precorp, correct?
I do.
And that Precorp's members must absorb that cost increase.
I realize that it's a member-owned entity, and the in normal course of business, if there's a cost increase, it gets passed on to the members.
You agree that if Precorp were required to pay the increase to Basin, but member rates were not increased by the same amount, that it would be extremely unlikely that Precorp would meet its RUSO tier?
I don't dispute that.
And you would not want to see Precorp fall below the required O tier, would you?
I wouldn't. You know, as a isolated matter in and of itself, no, I don't. I of course, there's this problem in that I believe a significant portion of the costs that have been billed to Precorp from Basin are improper for purposes of this case. And so I agree, it creates a dilemma.
Talk about the alternate suggestion that you made in your testimony. You agree with me that rate design should be equitable and that it treats customers fairly.
Sure.
And in fact, in the recent general rate case in which you testified, you expressed concern that the joint interveners had been and continue to be subject to significantly different rate-making treatment than the rest of Precorp's customers.
Well, to clarify, in the general rate case, Carbon Creek was a participant in that case, not the joint interveners. And so this is the joint interveners as a larger group. But I do agree with your characterization if we're limiting it to Carbon Creek, and which is a customer in the CBM class.
Yet in this case, you're recommending that the commission disallow recovery of the DGC-related charges for those customers that are opposing recovery. In other words, the joint interveners, while suggesting that the rest of Precorp's customers pay those new costs.
Well, that's not my primary recommendation. My primary recommendation is that it be disallowed for all customers. However, I did make an alternate recommendation, and quite frankly, it's because I've struggled to try to find a middle ground that could be acceptable in light of the circumstances in this case. You know, I did not expect to find that the DGC-related costs would be as great as they are. I realize that's a big number. And I also recognize that in the cooperative model, there's a certain amount of deference that gets paid to decisions by the board. And it's possible that there might be some belief that if the board is comfortable in accepting these costs because the board believes that DGC is a good long-term investment, that perhaps the commission should defer to that. And I suppose that what I'm saying is that, look, a significant portion of Precorp's load doesn't want to be making de facto equity investments in DGC. And it might be possible to structure a solution in which they weren't required to do that. Therefore, they wouldn't have to pay the portion of the increase that's ascribed to DGC increase, but also at the same time, not receive any proportionate going forward benefit from DGC's ownership. That is, if there are future dividends coming from DGC, then the customers who were exempted from having to pay the DGC-related increase would not receive the benefit of those dividends in the future. So I structured it as a quid pro quo, not not simply a unilaterally better proposition, but one in which customers specifically say, irrespective of the board's view of the future of DGC, they don't want a significant portion of their dollars going to invest. So it was my attempt to try to find a middle ground, but it's a secondary recommendation. It's my primary recommendation is a disallowance for all customers.
Now, in the general rate case, you testified that one of the critical policy considerations in rate design is minimizing inter-class subsidies, correct?
Correct.
Yet, if Precorp was disallowed recovery of the $5.27 million that comes from your second place suggestion, that would otherwise be paid by the joint interveners, and Precorp still has to pay that amount, Precorp's other customers would be allocated that amount.
They would, but bear with me on my reasoning. It's not, that would not be a subsidy. It would be a difference of opinion about whether it's reasonable to require customers on a going forward basis to be the vehicle de facto for infusing equity into DGC. To the extent that the board is making that decision on behalf of many of its members, that would be the consequence. Those members would be, in essence, helping to fund the DGC losses going forward. There are other customers who've taken the trouble to say they do not wish to be participants in that equity infusion de facto, and are willing to receive a smaller benefit in the future from that investment. So it's really a matter of opting out of an investment proposition that they feel is unreasonable, in their opinion.
Using your terminology then, as a result of this difference in opinion, it would require Precorp's remaining members to pay wholesale power costs related to the joint interveners' kilowatt hours, their usage.
Conceivably, yes. But of course, then they would receive a disproportionate amount of the benefits that are projected from DGC's profitability in the future.
The forecast, which you dispute the accuracy of.
I didn't dispute the accuracy of it, but it is a forecast. Other people talked about how inaccurate forecasts are in this proceeding. I didn't specifically dispute
it. Now, you understand that there has been no equity infusion by Basin to DGC, correct?
I heard that, yes. Yes, I did hear that.
Well, you've expressed the opinion that this commission should look at the DGC component of Basin's wholesale rates.
In this proceeding, since DGC losses are the primary driver of this rate increase, yes.
Would you agree that if the commission should look at the DGC component, it should look at the other components of the rates?
Well, I guess I don't quite know what you mean by your question.
Well, if this commission should look at Basin's wholesale power rate and look into it and say, here's the DGC loss component of the rate, should the commission look at other components of what the wholesale power rate is?
Well, the commission is certainly free to consider what other elements they wish. That's up to the commission, right? I'm bringing to the commission's attention a significant component that I feel is outside the boundaries of normal rate making.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ellsbury. Commissioner Brighton, do you have any questions?
I do. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Higgins.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Brighton.
I know you've been here the last couple of days and have heard my questioning of different witnesses and kind of where my train of thought is at this point. So as traditionally we do, I want concepts and questions. First one is maybe a little bit different than what I asked other witnesses, but what are your thoughts on whether the prudency review of the commission is different between an IOU
I read the commission's rule on this subject as not differentiating between a cooperative and a IOU, or a cooperative that's under an all requirement IOU. So I interpret the commission's responsibility to apply equally to both.
You've heard my questions to other witnesses about treating categories of expenses and benefits consistently in a COPA filing.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts on those, on my questions and the other responses to that, those questions?
I think that the COPA filings up to this point have not, as was discussed, have not passed through discrete benefits that came from bill credits. And I think that the commission should structure LACOPA and its treatment of those things as it prefers. I mean, I think there's more than one way to do that. But I do think that it does underscore the fact that in the past, not everything that came from Basin, not every change that came from Basin went through the COPA. There were carve-outs, and so that certainly says to me that in this particular case, where there's a cost coming through the COPA that has unusual attributes and is being challenged, it's certainly possible to carve that out as well.
You've been involved in the Rocky Mountain Power Net power cost adjustment cases in the past.
Yes, I have.
Do you think we aspire to a greater level of consistency in the way that we apply that power cost adjustment than what we've seen here?
Yes, it's consistency and scrutiny, quite frankly.
If we're not able to go all the way that you want us to in terms of disallowance, mm-hmm. but make some determination under our rules that this DGC loss that you quantified is not commodity or commodity related under our rules, and don't allow it to be recovered in the COPA, but set it aside for another proceeding where it may be recoverable. Let's say it ultimately is recoverable. Does that matter to your clients about when it gets recovered or in what mechanism it gets recovered?
I don't know that the same dollars being recovered in a different docket other than the COPA really makes much material difference to them, quite frankly. In my mind, it's an issue of prudency, or it's certainly there's an important threshold issue as to whether these kind of losses should be passed on to captive customers. And I think that threshold question would arise and seems to be challenged, whether it's in a COPA or whether it's in a general rate case.
So that joint intervener's position is really this is an issue of disallowance, not necessarily a matter of the proper mechanism to recover a cost billed by Basin to Precor.
It is in my mind.
Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Brighton. Deputy Chairman Russell.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Higgins.
Good afternoon, Deputy Chair Russell.
Do you have an opinion as to whether or not this commission has any jurisdiction over Basin?
I'm not an attorney, and I don't have an opinion that could be offered about that. So I really have limited my analysis in this matter to the commission's rules, which apply to Precor. And my understanding of your rules is that costs that are being passed through in a COPA must be prudent, even if they are incurred outside the commission's jurisdiction. And so it didn't seem to me necessary to, in applying that rule, to have jurisdiction over a basin to disallow pre-court costs if they are imprudent and were incurred at basin.
Well, thinking of this in your model, your world, wouldn't the best solution be that if these costs were not going to be allowed in rates, that the best solution would be that basin did not charge pre-court for those costs?
Yes.
And I will I'll represent to you that I do not believe we have the jurisdiction to order basin to do that. So that leaves us with other ways of trying to solve the problem. Do you have an opinion on whether or not it would be a good idea to order Precorp to not pay a bill that it receives from Basin pursuant to its contract with Basin?
I can't give you a legal opinion on that, but as a policy matter, I do believe that some action, some message from the commission, perhaps a message along those very lines, is warranted. Some action that could precipitate a discussion with Precorp and Basin to address this issue. It is an uncomfortable situation. I grant you that. But I believe that you are faced with costs that are flowing through a mechanism that are not reasonable to be passed on to captive customers. And so I think that the kind of directive, hypothetical directive you've identified, would be an appropriate course of action, or could be, or one course of action that could be reasonable.
You testified that you're aware that if Precorp pays, we'll call it the $13 million, and then we don't allow Precorp to recover the $13 million, that you believed that it would seriously harm its financials and probably would not meet its RUS requirements?
Unfortunately, yes.
And Precorp then would have to find some other way to make sure that their financials stay within RUS requirements. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Wouldn't that eventually cause some sort of financial impact on all the members of Precorp?
Unfortunately, it could. That's why I agree it's a difficult circumstance, and yet not challenging cause sets up a situation in which, you know, almost anything can get passed through without representative of the public interest approving or disapproving of it. So I agree, it's a difficult threshold problem.
Do you agree with what we've seen in some of the pre-filed testimony, and I believe it's Ms. Sorensen that discussed this too, that for 2017, the looking at all the benefits, the embedded benefits and all from Dakota Gasification Company, are projected to be about $90 million versus the losses of $67 million for a net benefit to Basin and its customers of approximately $23 million.
Yes, I've heard that. Okay.
So it would be your opinion that if we could just erase everything having to do with Dakota right now and make it go away, in your opinion, what would that do to all of the Precorp customers' rates?
Well, if Dakota Gasification shut down, and if the $90 million calculation is correct, then by that math, it would be a negative consequence of $23 million. But that's, of course, the trade-off between shutting down Dakota Gasification on the one hand and keeping it running. My parsing of this analysis is that recognition of benefits from DGC if we're going to use that to justify having customers pay higher rates because they're absorbing the losses of DGC, because Basin owns DGC, that those benefits that are used to offset that loss should really be limited to the benefits of ownership, not a calculation that says, well, it's either Basin, either DGC exists or it doesn't exist. But I agree that you know, based on those numbers, if those numbers are correct, then if DGC were to shut down completely, then those numbers indicate there would be a $23 million negative impact.
So should I understand then that the joint intervener's interest in this is less financial and more principal?
I'd say that it's both, Commissioner. It's certainly principal, but the joint intervener's position isn't that DGC should be shut down. We haven't made any analysis or recommendations or suggested that it should be shut down. What my testimony argues is that in seeking to consolidate, in seeking to shore up its consolidated balance sheet, which was having problems because of DGC, and as I understood it from yesterday's discussion, in part a required, what was believed in June 2016 when the rate increase was adopted, required equity infusions to meet a covenant related to a urea investment. My view is that captive customers shouldn't be the source of that financing. And even though the equity infusion has been taken off the table because they renegotiated their covenant, at the time of the rate increase, that covenant was in place. And while it's been explained that the equity infusion by itself doesn't cause a rate increase, it's a balance sheet transaction, I understand that. Where was the cash going to come from for that balance sheet transaction? Where was the cash going to come from with which Basin was going to make the equity infusion? Well, it was coming from this rate increase. So what we have is a consolidated balance sheet problem at Basin. And this is explained in Ms. Sorensen's testimony. A consolidated balance sheet problem at Basin. The key problem was DGC. There were covenants requiring equity infusions tied to financing for a urea plant. And captive customers were the source of the cash to make that financing possible, or to make the equity infusion possible into DGC. My view and recommendation is that captive customers should not be a ready source for that type of going forward financing. It isn't a criticism of DGC overall. It isn't a statement that there's no benefits. It's a statement about what was the best step to take under the circumstances. Was it to go to customers and raise their rates, or was it to try to solve this problem another way, perhaps through new equity, perhaps through a voluntary subscription? That really is what my testimony drives at. It's not to say, well, let's just let the whole thing shut down.
Which brings us back to one of the practical problems in this entire issue, and that is Basin may have other options, but we have no authority to order them to choose another option. So let's go get back to the real world, because what I feel we have here is we have a textbook kind of issue looking for a real world solution. And the issue, I understand your issue. I'm having trouble with that real world solution part. So let's say that we disallow the $13 million. Would you agree that Precorp is going to have to do something financially to solve that problem?
Something financially, or if it is unable to renegotiate terms with Basin Electric.
And I believe one of the Precorp witnesses suggested that one potential solution might be to go out and get loans. If they went out and got loans, and then tried to put those within the rates. Would that be acceptable?
I think that would also probably be problematic, wouldn't it?
That's what I thought. Yes. Your answer would be. And that's where I'm getting to is, where's the practical solution to this? Nobody has presented one yet, and you're our last guy, so it's up to you.
I've made some suggestions as to ways that the commission could mitigate the amount of the disallowance. I've, for example, identified recognizing the benefits of ownership of DGC as an offset to disallowance. And so that would soften the amount of the disallowance if those were recognized, the disallowance would go from $13.2 million to about $8.5 million. There are other ways of looking at the amount of the DGC losses that are in rates. I focused on the 17-month period of the COPA. That seemed, for rate-making purposes, to be the most rational period of time to look at it. But if the commission believed that these costs should not come into rates, but we're struggling with how to do it in the real world, the commission could look at a longer period of time. For example, the losses from DGC are projected to decline over time. So an alternative approach would be to look at DGC's losses share of the rate increase, not over 17 months, but to look at it over 29 months, add another year to the math, or even add one more year to the math. As you add time to the math, the proportion of DGC losses that are baked into the rate increase declines. Now, it's declining in part because projections for DGC losses go down, and it's also declining in part because the rate increase really is quite rich for Basin Electric as a standalone entity. And so perhaps at some point in the future, Basin Electric will revisit whether it really needs to have rates a level they've adopted once they've absorbed the DGC losses. But I am saying that if you believe that some type of disallowance is appropriate, while in the purest sense, one could argue it's all or nothing, as a practical matter, there are ways to mitigate the amount. And I've offered a couple of different ways, recognizing the benefits from ownership of DGC as an offset, or perhaps extending the period of time of the analysis for which the DGC losses are included in the basin rate increase.
Let me ask you one or two questions about your alternative solution.
Yes.
And if we went with that solution, it seems to me that the best way to do it would be to attempt to erase any trace of DGC in the rates of the joint interveners. Don't pay any of the costs, none of the benefits flow. Is that reasonable?
Not necessarily as stated, but I would refine that.
Okay.
As I said, the benefits, some of the benefits that DGC brings to the table, it brings to the table because it exists. Just like the joint interveners exist, and they help keep the fixed unit costs down for all the other customers on the system. Well, the fact that DGC exists and buys power from Basin is just like any other large customer. So any offset from those benefits shouldn't be removed from any other customer. But I would agree that benefits from DGC associated with the ownership of DGC should be restricted or removed for these customers going forward. So that would mean specifically future dividend payments that wind up as credits, customer credits, bill credits, would not apply to these customers if they were associated with profitability from DGC.
Okay, and if some of the benefits are still going to flow to the joint interveners, then it seems to me that there must be some of the losses and costs that might be associated with ownership too that would also flow to the joint interveners. Wouldn't there be?
Well, again, could you ask me your question again one more time? I just want to make sure I understand it.
Right. I think what I'm hearing in your explanation of what would happen is that the costs, the losses, would not flow to the joint interveners, but you know, you get to keep some of the cake. Some of the benefits associated with Dakota would come. And it seems to me that if there are some benefits that would still belong to the joint interveners, there must be a share in some of the losses as well.
Well, the joint interveners should not get benefits associated with DGC ownership. So that would mean they wouldn't get the burden of DGC ownership, that is absorbing losses here in this case, and they wouldn't get the benefits that are associated with the ownership part, that is the ownership, the sharing of fixed overhead. But other benefits are simply are there because fixed costs are lower when you have more entities sharing costs. And that type of benefit exists irrespective of whether Basin owns DGC. That simply comes from DGC existing. So I wouldn't see any reason to make an adjustment to remove the benefit of the fact that DGC exists. I could see an adjustment to remove benefits that come from Basin's ownership of DGC.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Why don't we go ahead and take a break until 2:45? Is that all right, Jim?